Right now, we're joined by Michael Isikoff of Newsweek magazine. He wrote this week's cover story about a man many regard as a hero and others as a traitor. Thomas Tamm was entrusted with some of the country's most closely guarded secrets. He's the son of an FBI agent, a former prosecutor, who went to work at the Justice Department in the unit that handled intelligence on suspected terrorists and spies. During the course of his duties, he discovered a secret program that appeared to be illegal, warrantless wiretaps of American citizens. The Newsweek article describes what happens afterwards, and Michael Isikoff joins us here in Studio 3A to tell us about it. Michael, nice to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Great to be with you.
And what did Thomas Tamm do when he found this secret program?
Well, he agonized. He raised questions about it within the office he worked. It's called the Office of Intelligence Policy and Review. It's probably the most secretive unit within the Justice Department. It is the unit in charge of national security wiretaps. And I should make it clear that Thomas Tamm didn't discover the program itself. The program, as it was called within the office, was extremely secretive, and almost nobody in the office was actually read into the program. He stumbled upon the existence of this thing called the program that seemed to trigger all these unusual procedures within the office so that when information gleaned from the program about which he was not which he didn't fully understand needed to be used, or there was an interest in using it to get legitimate warrants from the FISA court, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court.
That's the secret court.
The secret court. There would be this sort of two levels whereby which anything normal FISA procedures would go to any federal judge on the court and could be signed by the deputy attorney general and the attorney general. But these program warrants could only be signed by the attorney general and could only go to the chief judge of the court. All the other judges were basically kept from these secret program warrants. Thomas Tamm was puzzled by this. Why are some federal judges, why is this being concealed from some federal judges? And began to ask questions and was told essentially to mind his own business, drop the subject. One of his supervisors tells him that the program is probably illegal. Another, who he runs into shortly after that, tells him that there is great concern by the chief judge of the FISA court about the way these program wiretap requests are being handled. She's very upset. She's shutting down the program, and the attorney general could even get indicted about this. And according to Thomas Tamm's account, he's pretty much stunned to hear these comments about a illegal, lawless program within the Justice Department. He tries to raise the issue with a former colleague on Capitol Hill who was detailed to the Senate Judiciary Committee and doesn't get anywhere. The former colleague tells him that he shouldn't be talking about this. And then he stews and about what he should do next.
Well, let's go back over that a little bit.
Sure.
There is a normal process, again, as you suggested, for getting subpoenas for wiretaps of American citizens.
Warrants.
It's called warrants. Right. The FISA court, and in other words, they present their evidence to one of these 11 judges who are on this. They rotate in service, and they say, all right, your evidence is good enough or not good enough. It's almost always good enough.
Right.
But then they issue a warrant so the government can put on what would otherwise be an illegal wiretap.
Correct.
The program was quite different, and this was something authorized by President Bush right after 9/11 to follow leads of, if they found a phone number on an al-Qaeda computer in Pakistan, an American phone number, they wanted to put a wiretap on that number and didn't want to go through the normal FISA process.
Exactly. It was a program that was operating entirely outside the orbit of the law that governed national security wiretaps. Basically, the president relying on legal opinions that had been drafted by some very conservative lawyers in the Justice Department asserted that as commander-in-chief during wartime, he had the power to override federal laws and order the interception of phone conversations in the United States in order to protect the country without going through this elaborate process of getting FISA warrants.
What Vice President Cheney once called that obnoxious court, or one of his aides.
Yes, it was David Addington, his now chief of staff, then chief counsel, who referred to the federal court that had been set up by Congress as that obnoxious court seemed to indicate that he would like it to just go away.
There was another aspect to the program, though, a much more massive project to data mine all sorts of emails and telephone communications to try to use, computer, programs to try to see if there were patterns that might bring up suspicions. This is not, we found your number on an Al-Qaeda computer in Pakistan. This was hunting through the records of millions of Americans.
Exactly. And actually, this was the far more sweeping part of the program. And this was not entirely understood at the time when the first reports came out about this, that the really extensive part of it was this massive collection of the phone records and email records of millions upon millions of American citizens, as well as financial records. These phone records were being turned over by major U.S. telecommunications companies, giving the time, everybody you called, the time that you called, essentially like your phone bill. And all this was being fed into NSA supercomputers to do data mining, link analysis, to look for patterns that might or might not suggest terrorist activity.
And this was, again, they're not looking at the content of the emails, they're looking at the routing and the subject
right.
heads and that sort of thing. So Thomas Tamm finds out, to the degree he finds out that this is going on, he gets nowhere with his friend on Capitol Hill. And at the end of his conversation with her, he says, well, I've got no alternative but to go to the press.
Right. And as Thomas Tamm described it in hours of interviews I've had with him over the last several months, he was genuinely agonized over what to do. I should point out, you mentioned that he's the son of an FBI agent. He's more than that. He's sort of an FBI princeling, if you were. He comes from a family of some of the top FBI officials in the country. His uncle was a top aide to J. Edgar Hoover, who invented the name FBI and its motto, fidelity, bravery, integrity. That was in 1935, Edward Tamm. His father, Quinn Tamm, was an assistant director of the FBI during this period, too, and was also a top aide to J. Edgar Hoover. When Thomas Tamm was a toddler, he played under J. Edgar Hoover's desk and even attended John F. Kennedy's inaugural parade from J. Edgar Hoover's balcony when he was 8 years old. So this is a guy who's steeped in FBI. His brother is an FBI agent. His mother was a secretary at the FBI. He very much was steeped in the culture of the FBI and, according to his son, has a passion for justice. He'd spent his years as a public prosecutor putting bad people in jail. He felt very firmly about the rule of law and felt that he really was troubled by the idea of working in a Justice Department for officials who were telling him what he was working on was illegal and that people might get indicted about it. So after much agonizing, as he tells it, he finally slips into a Washington, D.C. metro stop one day during his lunch hour, goes to some partially concealed phone booths hidden by some two large metro maps, and picks up the phone and calls a reporter for the New York Times.
And the story eventually comes out. We all heard the story of how the Times was asked not to disclose this program, sat on the story for a while, but eventually it came out, not quickly enough for Thomas Tamm's taste, but
right.
eventually it did come out and caused a major scandal. And he was found out in part because of unfortunate email that he sent. And it is a possibility. The FBI has come and searched his house. They've taken all of his computer files and that sort
right.
of thing. His family didn't know what was going on. He wasn't home at the time. It must have been a terrifying evening. Nevertheless, he now could face 10 years in prison.
Well, he's faced 2.5 years of what can only be described as a horrific ordeal. I mean, he has been investigated by the FBI. The FBI has raided his house, has seized his possessions, questioned his friends and associates, and he's lived under this cloud for the whole time. They have pressured him to try to get him to plead guilty to a felony for disclosing classified information. I should point out that Thomas Tamm is quite adamant on a couple of points. One is that he disclosed no sources and methods that could have been harmful to national security because he didn't know what the program was. He knew nothing about the operations for the program, so he really wasn't disclosing any information about the details of what the NSA was doing. What he was disclosing to the Times was sort of irregularities in legal procedures that related to this thing called the program. But nevertheless, that, you know, that would be something that the lawyers can argue whether that qualifies under the statute for the kind of violations that they might consider him for. But he's yes, he's sort of basically his life has been put on hold for all this time. And I think that was one of the reasons he chose finally to come forward and say, yes, here's what I did. Here's why I did it. Make of it what you will.
We just have a minute left with you, Michael, and I want to ask a question. His fate will be decided in the Obama administration, not by the Bush administration. It's going to be decided after the new year. But one thing we never hear about is, was this illegality worth it? Was the intelligence produced? Was it valuable?
Well, it's very hard to say because so much of it remains classified that when you ask for evidence that this kind of warrantless surveillance outside the FISA law was productive, they have a hard time pointing you to any specifics that can say that can show that it was. But one interesting quote, one of the lawyers for Thomas Tamm, interestingly enough, is Asa Hutchinson, who is the former Undersecretary of Homeland Security under President Bush, former also Republican U.S. attorney. And he says, when you look at all the available evidence, he's quoted in the piece as saying there's no evidence that what Thomas Tamm did was harmful to national security.
Michael Isikoff, thanks very much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
He tells the story in an article called The Fed Who Blew the Whistle. It's on the cover of this week's issue of Newsweek magazine. He was kind enough to join us here today in Studio 3A. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.